Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the conference call of Instone Real Estate. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulties hearing the conference, please press star key followed by the zero on your telephone for an operator assistance. May I now hand you over to Burkhard Sawazki, who will lead you through this meeting. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome and joining for our full year 2021 earnings call. Our CEO, Kruno Crepulja, and our CFO, Foruhar Madjlessi, will walk you through our results presentation and give you more insight into our current business performance and our outlook. As usual, this will be followed by a Q&A session. I will now hand over to Kruno Crepulja.
Good morning, everyone. I'm glad you could join us for our full year 2021 earnings call. Our management team and I are pleased with the overall very good set of results in spite of certain headwinds. In the end, we achieved a strong bottom-line result, slightly exceeding our raised forecast. You are all aware of the fact that we had to cope with the direct or indirect effects of the pandemic, such as approval delays or supply shortages. This had a dampening effect on our revenue recognition, preventing a better result. The key drivers for the sound bottom-line result were our sustained high margins, which again provide evidence of the strength of the Instone business model. An important milestone for our corporate strategy in 2021 was also the further implementation of our sustainability strategy. We strongly believe that a credible ESG strategy is a key success factor going forward, and we have the clear ambition to be a forerunner in this field. We will elaborate on this later during the call. Like everyone else, we are shocked by the recent dramatic developments in Ukraine, which may even mark a turning point in history. At this point in time, it is not yet possible to adequately assess the possible effects of this. However, we do believe that we have good reasons to be confident, as our asset class has so far proven to be very resilient. The year-to-date performance also confirms our view. Let me start our presentation with a summary of the highlights of the current business performance on slide five. The key message remains unchanged, and this has not changed at all over the past month. The secular growth trend for our business is fully intact. The demand for our product and our asset class remains very strong from both private as well as institutional investors. We had a strong year-end business in the fourth quarter with the signing of seven institutional deals. We sold projects worth more than 1.1 billion, and thus we have reached our raised target very well. And we are also currently witnessing very strong demand during the first quarter, with no noticeable impact, neither from the volatility in interest rates nor from the geopolitical tensions so far. This positive demand trend also translates into further rising prices. We have also further strengthened the basis for future growth, including one joint venture project. We have acquired projects with an estimated sales volume of around 1.8 billion, showing us on track with our ramp-up targets. Our GDV climbed to 7.5 billion, an increase of some 24% compared to last year. One of the most important issues over the last year, maybe for the entire global economy, has been the global supply chain disruptions. During our last call, we also had to flag a certain negative impact on our business. Especially during the fourth quarter, we observed a deterioration of the supply situation. Nevertheless, we can confirm that our construction progress year to date is on schedule. In such an environment, construction costs continue to rise. You have all seen the recent jump in commodity and energy prices. It is fair to assume that growth in construction costs will be at a similar level to last year. But we are still in the position and that we as Instone can cope with these effects. Price adjustments and also some positive net effects from government subsidies should clearly offset these cost effects. Last but not least, I would like to draw your attention to the extension of our ESG reporting within the sustainability section of our annual report. After achieving a top ESG ranking in Q4 last year, we are now, among other things, providing further insight into our planned net zero path and an analysis of our greenhouse gas emissions along our entire value chain within a fully fledged sustainability report. Let's now take a brief look at our financial KPIs for the full year 2021. Our adjusted revenues amounted to 783.6 million. Although we had to lower our top line target due to the mentioned negative effects from the pandemic, this still reflects a strong growth of more than plus 63% year on year. Our gross margin stayed at a very high level of more than 28%, in line with our upward revised target. This is a leading margin within our industry, and this is clearly a reflection of the robust demand situation and our good cost control. Finally, also with support from lower interest expenses, we have seen a jump in adjusted earnings after tax to 96.9 million euro, beating our targets. On the back of this result and our targeted payout ratio of 30% of our adjusted earnings, we will propose a dividend of 62 cents to the AGM, a strong rise of almost 140% compared to last year. Coming to our outlook, we reiterate our financial guidance for 2022. We are expecting adjusted revenues of 900 million to 1 billion and adjusted net earnings of 90 to 100 million with a gross margin of 25 to 26%. We are also again forecasting sales of more than 1 billion. However, it is still too early for a final assessment whether there will be an additional impact on our business due to the geopolitical tensions, but we can confirm that our business performance has not been affected so far. To provide some more insight into the current demand situation, we have provided you an update of our retail sales ratio on slide number 6. This chart clearly demonstrates that the demand, at least so far, remains completely unaffected by the geopolitical tensions or the rise in interest rates. The sales ratio remains constantly above the long-term mean of 2%. Also, the leading indicators, the current number of reservations and notarization appointments, point to continued robust demand. Despite the recent increase in interest rates, low mortgage rates remain a supportive demand factor. Rising inflation expectations, including the positive outlook for further rent growth, are also providing a tailwind for the investor appetite for real assets. On the following slide, number 7, we again collected some data points from recent market surveys and also the results from our sales performance. Both data sources, although referring to Q4, also confirmed the unchanged positive picture. German residential property prices continued their upward trend. From our own experience with our own larger projects, we would also feel comfortable with the assumption of mid-single digit price increases of some 4 to 5% year on year. Over the last years, our asset class had massive tailwind from ultra-low rates. Despite the recent strong rise in interest rates from an extremely low basis, which you can also see on the chart at the bottom with the graph of the 10-year mortgage rates, the overall positive environment is still intact. With mortgage rates at around 1.5%, real rates, which have always been an important demand factor for our asset class, clearly remain in negative territory. Let's move to slide number 8 and give you some more insight on how we look at the current supply and cost situation. At the beginning of the year, we saw a certain relaxation in the availability of materials, but also in part in costs. Admittedly, this has changed somewhat over the last couple of weeks, but nevertheless, we have very good reasons to be confident that we can cope with the continued cost price inflation. On the right-hand side at the top, you can see that construction increased by some 14% in Germany in Q4 last year. But this is also attributable to a base effect due to a very low comparable in the prior year. Sequentially, quarter on quarter, there was actually some decelerating momentum. We believe that our cost increases were significantly below these figures, mainly due to our market position and due to our procurement strategy of early ordering. We shall continue with our strategy, and we have now already locked in the terms for some 50% of our expected construction costs for all of our projects, which are either pre-sold or where we have started the sales process. On the remaining part, we have taken into account the current cost situation plus a cost buffer. We are anticipating similar cost dynamics in the market in 2022 as in 2021, if you just compare spot on spot. Generally, I would like to point out that we are pursuing a very conservative budgeting approach, taking into account future cost price inflation plus a cost provision. In our condo sales business, we are adjusting continuously our selling prices, especially when we observe an accelerated cost increase. We are also a net beneficiary of energy efficiency related state subsidies, which are exceeding our incremental costs. Overall, it is fair to conclude that the strongest margin protection still comes from the demand side, with a continued positive trend for house price inflation. There has always been a high correlation between CPI and HPI growth. And as a reminder, we are benefiting from favorable HPI to CPI relationship as construction costs on average only account for some 40% of our revenues. Accordingly, a 1% additional price increase can compensate for 2.5% additional increase in costs. And as mentioned, in our pricing models, we have factored in prudent cost assumptions anyway. Let's switch to the political landscape on slide number 9. German residential is a highly regulated market, and the lack of supply of affordable housing is considered one of the most pressing social problems. Generally, the new coalition agreement of the so-called traffic light coalition contains several elements that are supportive for our industry. Among other things, the declared new construction target of 400,000 residential units annually. And we believe that we are well positioned for this growth program, especially with our market positioning as a forerunner in the mid-market segment. However, it is also fair to say that the new government did not have a very good start with the early termination of the support program for new construction of energy-efficient buildings. The currently available budget of 1 billion for KfW 40 buildings is of course completely insufficient for an ambitious climate target as well as new construction targets. So let's wait and see how the new program, which is going to be introduced in the coming months, will look like. Nevertheless, as previously mentioned, we at Instone are in the good situation of having secured the KfW 55 subsidies in time and for all of our relevant projects with a planned sales start in 2022, prior to the early termination of the program at end of January. Although we are going to share the net benefit with the buyers of our product, this will provide some additional buffer against the backdrop of rising construction costs. Moving to our portfolio section on slide number 11. As you know, we have committed to a revenue target of 1.6 billion in 2026. With our current acquisitions, we are laying the foundation for the planned step change in growth, including one JV project. We acquired projects with a prospective sales target of more than 1.8 billion, showing us on track for our growth targets. Accordingly, our GDV, excluding JV projects, climbed to 7.5 billion by the end of December, equating to an increase of nearly 24% on a yearly basis. What you can expect from us is that we will also acquire a similar volume in 2022. Slide 12 illustrates a breakdown of our current project portfolio as of the Q4 reporting date. The portfolio comprises of 54 projects with more than 16,400 residential units. Some 87% of the GDV is distributed to the most attractive metropolitan areas of Germany, and the remaining part in very attractive B cities. In the lower chart, you can see the usual breakdown of the current development status of our portfolio. Of the nearly 7.5 billion of GDV, which is shown here, around 3.3 billion is already under construction or pre-construction, and thereof over 90%. This flexibility for expected sales and earnings growth in the years to come. On the right-hand side, we provide additional insight regarding the status of our building permits. For some 57% of our GDV, there is already a building permit in place, with some additional 16% which are currently in the permit process. On page 13, we illustrate our track record of ramping up our business. I think this also shows that we have good reason to be optimistic regarding our further growth plans going forward. Since our IPO, we have managed to build up a high-quality project pipeline. Within 4 years, our GDV has more than doubled to now 7.5 billion. And over a period of only 3 years, our units under construction will show an expected sharp increase from some 2,000 units in 2019 to more than 6,000 units at the end of this year. I think these are strong indicators that we clearly have the internal capabilities to execute our ambitious growth strategy. Now I would like to hand over to Foruha for the financials and our ESG part.
Thank you, Kuno, and good morning, everyone, from my side. As Kuno has laid out already, I believe we have delivered a set of extraordinary results in 2021 against a demanding operating environment. Next to our remarkable 63% top-line growth and despite significant construction price inflation, as well as supply chain bottlenecks, we have exceeded our original gross margin target by 1.3 percentage points. Looking at our share price in contrast, I think the stock market must underestimate the quality of both our portfolio of development projects as well as our operational capabilities. Demand for our product remains strong, with sales price increases across our portfolio overcompensating construction price inflation. Institutional investors in particular are further increasing their focus on new build. And this is due to, first, much more favorable rent regulation applicable to new build versus standing residential properties, and second, ever-increasing ESG-related demands and disclosure requirements, such as the EU Taxonomy Directive or the highly relevant Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation, resulting in a hunt for ESG-compliant investments, which by definition, once again, means a pivot to new build. Our 28.3% gross margin reflects these trends, as well as the structural undersupply of residential space in all our markets. Our EBIT margin amounts to a stellar 19.9%. clearly benefiting from a strong gross margin, as well as our highly successful Berlin joint venture, FHP, and the corresponding share of earnings we have recorded. To be clear, this is a truly exceptional EBIT margin level, and you should not expect us to achieve that figure in the current fiscal year. Our adjusted earnings after tax amount to 96.9 million, up 140% year on year and exceeding the midpoint of our initial guidance by about 4.5 million. That is, despite adjusted revenues falling below the lower end of our initial guidance. Adjusted earnings per share have more than doubled versus the previous year and amount to €2.10. Consistent with our announced dividend policy, we intend to propose to our annual shareholders meeting a dividend payment of 62 cents per share. This figure corresponds to 30% of our adjusted after-tax earnings and 2.4 times our 2020 dividend. Turning to page 16, I would like to highlight two observations. One, institutional sales account for about 70% of total 2021 sales. We are a key beneficiary of the institutional focus on new build. Two, our Q4 is consistently our strongest quarter. About 50% of adjusted 2021 revenues have accrued in the final quarter. This pattern has been consistent over the previous year, and you should expect a continued seasonality for the current year. Over the page, I would like to highlight just two KPIs underpinning the strength of our balance sheet. First, our loan-to-cost stands at 20.1%, down 6.4 percentage points versus the previous year. Please remember also, as opposed to the more common loan-to-value ratio, our inventories are entering the equation at historic costs, not fair value. Second, our net debt to EBITDA now stands at 1.5 times, down from 2.8 times a year ago. Both these numbers should provide full confidence in our ability to finance our ramp up all the way through to achieving our target revenues in 2026 without the need of further equity. Page 18 summarizes our operating cash flow and liquidity position. Before new land investments, our existing portfolio has generated a remarkable operating cash flow of 256 million euros. assuming for a moment steady state at revenues of around 800 million rather than continued business expansion, we would have had to spend about 140 million in new land acquisition per annum to maintain that revenue level, resulting in a pro forma operating cash flow in excess of 110 million euros. This simple back of an envelope calculation should give you an idea of the company's generation cash generation potential post ramp up to our target revenue level. Once again, looking at our stock price, I can't help to ask the question if this is sufficiently understood in the marketplace. In terms of liquidity, as of December 31st, we had 150 million of cash at hand and an additional 120 million of undrawn 2-year committed revolving credit facilities. In summary, our business clearly operates from a position of financial strength with prudent leverage, strong cash flow generation, a well-balanced financing structure, and ample liquidity. On page 19, you find our prospective NAV, a good proxy for our intrinsic pipeline value. Conceptually, this reflects the NAV our portfolio would eventually generate, assuming a build-to-hold strategy for the entire project pipeline. Page 20 summarizes our revised 2021 guidance versus our achieved KPIs, as well as our 2022 outlook. We are guiding to adjusted revenues between 900 million and 1 billion. Our 25 to 26% margin guidance reflects an environment where upward pressure on prices for construction materials must be expected to continue, while demand will remain strong and HPI is likely to compensate the CPI inflation. As we continue to invest into our platform, we expect to achieve adjusted earnings after tax of 90 to 100 million on the back of new sales contracts exceeding 1 billion euros. You should also note that 100% of our target revenues for the year are covered by existing pipeline projects where master planning has already been completed. This eliminates a major source of timing uncertainty for the current year. Assuming construction starts and construction progress in line with our plan, we have already secured 58% of our target revenues for the year without any further sales. Before concluding the presentation, I would like to very quickly highlight a few key ESG achievements across the E, S, and G categories on page 23. All of these disclosures can be found in great detail in our sustainability report, which forms part of our annual report. We are providing the information on a voluntary basis consistent with European and German regulation for larger companies. In fact, our disclosure goes beyond the legal requirements. Our auditor has provided a limited assurance opinion in relation to the report. Within the environmental chapter, we are now disclosing our full greenhouse gas footprint for scopes 1, 2, and 3 on a life cycle assessment for the relevant under construction process projects. As part of our social disclosures, we have detailed a number of policies regarding topics such as the code of conduct applicable to all our suppliers, diversity KPIs, as well as health and safety measures and achievements. Our governance disclosures include a description of how we have incorporated our ESG strategy into the company governance, including responsibilities and variable management compensation linked to ESG targets. Finally, on page 24, two more specific findings I'd like to draw to your attention to. First, a snapshot on the operational carbon associated with the Instone portfolio. We have further reduced the operational CO2 footprint of our portfolio from 11 kilograms per square meter and year to 9.5 kilograms per square meter and year. This compares favorably to the emissions of the average German residential building at 26 kilograms per square meter and year. Second, based on EU taxonomy requirements, more than 80% of our projected buildings satisfy the substantial contribution to climate mitigation requirements as defined in the technical screening criteria of the EU taxonomy. These projected buildings have a primary energy demand of less than 90% of a nearly zero energy building as defined by EU regulation. I hope these highlights provide an idea of why we are convinced that ever-increasing ESG requirements are more an opportunity for us than a threat. With that, I'd like to open the call for questions.
Dear ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for all speakers, please dial 0 and 1 on the telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you find your question is answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 0 and 2 to cancel your question. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. We have a first question. It's from Thomas Rothäusler, Deutsche Bank. The line is now open for you.
Morning, everybody. I've got a couple of questions. Firstly, on the Russian-Ukraine crisis, I mean, what could be potential impact for your business? And do you think that maybe weaker consumer confidence might impact demand for apartments over time?
Hi, Thomas. So first question regarding impact, of course, it's too early for us to answer this completely. But I would say regarding material scarcity and construction costs, aluminium is one material which is delivered by Russian ore. The parquet, which is in the Ukraine produced, this could have an impact. Overall, I think we are calculating similar cost price inflation as we have seen in 2021. And the Ukraine crisis led to, let's say for us, that the construction prices, which slowed down a bit, now are rising again, and we assume the same cost price inflation number for this year as for last year. Regarding your second question, consumer confidence, we don't see any impact currently. The other way around, we have discussions with institutional buyers, which are asking for more resi investments, being a very secure harbor in insecure time period. So I would say that resi in Germany is clearly very secure, and this is reflected by the interested parties.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Second question, could you provide an update on the permitting processes? I mean, have you experienced any changes or, for example, authorities? If you look at authorities, are there now more back maybe from the COVID break?
So we are expecting 20 construction starts in 2022. And for the short-term projects with the construction start in the coming month, we have already secured the necessary building permits. So here we are absolutely on track regarding building permit and master planning processes so far.
Okay. Maybe on KfW subsidies, I mean, we have seen a lot of changes over the last couple of months. Especially also the limited budget for KfW 40 program, as I understand, and also there are plans for a new program, which seems actually more focused on refurbishment. Maybe you can elaborate a bit on these points.
Thomas, hi, it's Rua. First of all, I think this whole subsidy scheme has only been relevant to us from July 1st of last year onwards until mid of January. And I don't want to say it's been windfall profits, but it's not something that we've relied on in our calculations in the past. So this is the we have now recorded about 30 million of approved subsidies for some of our mostly KfW 55 projects. There is a pipeline of additional approvals that have been granted since the start of the year. And a few more outstanding that we have filed in time with a deadline. But again, I'd say that this for us is more upside than there is downside. Going forward, I think you're right, the focus is going to move a bit more to standing properties. at the same time, we understand that there will be a shift away from primary energy demand in terms of the new build subsidies and more towards CO2, which again is something that would we think could create a competitive advantage for us, because we are already reviewing every of our projects based on a life cycle analysis. And I think in terms of where we're coming out, we should be very competitive. But it remains to be seen. I think for us, again, I'd say in summary, there is more upside than there's downside.
Okay. Last one, actually, on margin outlook for institutional deals. As I understand, you have only fixed part of the costs for this year's projects. Could this be a margin risk for institutional deals, as you have basically fixed pricing there for these deals? So, I mean, house price inflation is fixed, but CPI, at least part of it, could go up. Is it right?
So looking at, you know, the overall portfolio, which is pre-sold on the sales process, we have secured approximately 50% of the construction costs are fixed. And for the remaining purchase activities, we have fully budgeted the cost price inflation numbers I mentioned, which we assume for this year realistic. So we are talking about approximately on a year-to-year basis of 10 to 11% of construction cost inflation, which is fully reflected in our budgeting. So therefore, I think we are very robust positioned here, and I don't see here a significant risk going forward.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The next question is by Emily Bidulf, Credit Suisse. The line is now open for you.
Morning, guys. I hope you're well. Thanks for taking my questions. I've got two, please. Firstly, thanks for giving us that disclosure on the 100% of this year's revenue already has a master plan in place. Is there any chance you could give us that percentage for 2023? And then secondly, you're obviously doing a good job of sort of locking in construction prices and controlling inflation on cost. But do you look at the subcontractor base and have any concerns over the financial health of it? I'm just conscious that presumably some subcontractors are having to absorb fairly meaningful margin compression and sort of potential losses. And is there any risk there of sort of subcontractor failure and that sort of having a knock-on impact on sort of the timing of construction or sort of potentially leading you to sort of have to go back to the market and construct, sort of look for contractors again? Thanks very much.
Hi, Emily. I start with the second one. First of all, we are working solidly with solvent construction partners, and we check every company in detail, of course. I think there's a very limited risk that the companies are going to insolvency. Up to date, we haven't faced conflicts regarding failures or cancellation companies, and we are already through the pandemic now facing, you know, 1 to 1.5 years of rising construction costs. Additionally, we share risk by indexing material prices when necessary. So if we, you know, agree to purchase works, which will start in 6 or 9 month time period, then we are indexing main positions, and we are building sufficient buffers in our calculation for rising material costs. So therefore, I think overall, I don't see by failures or cancellations.
Emily, on your first question, master planning in 2023 is already in place for about 80% of our revenues, bearing in mind that there's still some time to go. Clearly, that number, you know, should improve. At the same time, I think important to note that we're not relying on master planning in every single situation to be completed before we can start recording revenues and selling selling assets subject to the state of the master planning process. This can be quite a bit earlier.
Okay, thank you guys.
Welcome. Thank you.
The next question is by Philipp Kaiser, Warburg Research. The line is now opened for you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, and thanks for taking my question. Just a couple of follow-up here, starting with the permitting processes Thomas earlier mentioned. So if I'm correct, you said that you are planning 20 construction starts this year, and you secured a couple of building permits. Is it possible to shed some light on how many do you already secured for this year? And in general, the speed of the permitting processes, are we here back on pre-COVID level, or is it kind of visible that we have a new normal in the permitting process regarding the speed? Yeah, that would be very helpful.
So the second part of your question regarding the speed of permitting processes, I would assume that, or I would say that, as mentioned before, I think we the permit process itself is duration is longer than before the pandemic started. In average, I would say 3 to 4 months longer time period, which is necessary. But this is already, you know, reflected in our revenue guidance for this year. So there's no surprise in the first few months here in this year. Everything is going as planned, I would say. Hopefully, let's say the building permit process will improve going forward, but I think this will take time. So when the coronavirus is gone and there, I think that we'll see improvement again here. And the first part of the question, I'm looking to my team.
I would say, Philip, on this one, I think the key message here is that the near-term projects are permitted and the longer-term projects are all on track, and we have no reason to see any deviation from our time planned at the moment. I can't give you a precise number, but I also don't think that's very useful because it's more a question of, you know, not how many, but in terms of precisely the timing and sequencing of construction starts and relative to that, the permitting process, which again, I think we can reassure you, everything is perfectly on track. For the near term, we're fully covered, and for the second half of the year, all of our processes are where, you know, we think they should be, and our continued dialogue with the authorities don't give us any reason to believe that we will run into problems as we had last year.
Okay, perfect. Might one follow up on this one. So the 3 to 4 months longer in process mentioned, are they're included in the guidance for the first half of 2022 or for the entire year, and normalization is expected with the beginning of next year, or how we can read that?
I think Philip, that's the right way to look at it. We have you know, scheduled our construction starts in a very prudent manner, or the expectation for permittings, and that will gradually normalize into next year is our assumption.
Okay, perfect. And maybe one last on the financial KPI. So they all improved, so LTC further improved. Net financial debt to adjusted EBITDAR further decreased. So is it fair to assume that these KPIs will start to increase during 2022 regarding the planned investments to reach the 2026 targets, or yeah?
Correct. I think that's a fair assumption. You can assume again, you know, as I said before, we will generate about 200 million of operating cash flows from our existing projects, and then subject to our investment, which, you know, I would estimate at, let's say, 250 to 350 million euros, see a negative cash flow and increase in net debt.
Okay, perfect. Thanks a lot. Very helpful.
Sure. Welcome.
As a reminder, if you want to ask a question, please press 0 and 1. Our next question is by Tom Carstairs of Stiefel. The line is now open for you.
Morning. I just wanted to follow up on the supply bottleneck side of things, because if we go back to the revised guidance for 2022, it was subject to the permit delays, which you've spoken about in depth, and also the supply bottlenecks, and essentially your guidance was based on assumptions of that sort of normalizing at a certain point. And I just wondered if you could update us in terms of how the supply sort of bottleneck is versus your expectations, please.
So yes, our assumption is that we will see a normalization till mid of this year. In the first month, we already have seen a relaxation of material scarcity, but we also expect that through the Ukraine conflict, we'll see that this will again be a bit tougher. Overall, I would assume that our guidance is very robust. So I think we will manage this. And currently, we talked to the suppliers. We currently don't see any additional effect through Ukraine. But clearly, this will be a topic for this year. But as mentioned, I think we have sufficient buffers here in our guidance.
Thank you.
For the moment, there are no further questions, and so I hand back to you.
Thank you for your participation. If you have further questions, please feel free to contact the IR team also after this call. Thank you and goodbye.
Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.